is the Bearcast, presented by Bird Cultian Ford. Bird Cultian Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoke and Grayson Grundhaver.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Bearcast on this Tuesday, January the 7th, 2025, the first episode of the new year for us. And with a game to talk about before, well, we don't talk about games for quite a long while as the offseason hits, but rest assured, there's plenty still going on. A couple of coaching changes on Baylor's staff in the last 24 hours, as well as the ongoing madness of the transfer portal. And yes, there was that game that we will discuss, the Texas Bowl, the 44-31 LSU win over the Bears to close out the 2024 season. So that just a sampling of what we will get to on today's episode. Thanks for those of you joining us live on the YouTube page. Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page is where you can find us live at 11 a.m. on Tuesdays. And if you're over there, hit that like and subscribe button. We'd appreciate that. But also, of course, all of the reading and conversating that you can do over at Sikkim365.com. That's 24/7, 365. We do appreciate however you join us. I'm Craig Smoke, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver. Got Garrett Ross behind the scenes as well. And Grayson, back again from the holidays. Hope you had a good little break. But the end of the football season is here, and the Bears finish 8-5 after the loss to LSU last week in Houston, which we will get into a little bit. But how are the holidays, and your thoughts, I guess, briefly on just kind of the way everything is wrapped up here?
The holidays were good. I mean, you know, it's Christmas time and New Year's. For me, it's the busiest time because of the transfer portal, which obviously Baylor has attacked very heavily and has been doing that for the past couple years. And this year, you know, kind of no different. It's been really fast paced and really fun to cover. As far as the Texas Bowl goes, that was a lot of fun. You know, I was able to go to the game and kind of see the Baylor crowd there, which I felt like was a really cool moment, because we were told kind of all week in the lead up that, you know, Baylor fans were going to show up for this game. And even the Texas Bowl commissioner, I think, mentioned that it was a Baylor heavy crowd, and, you know, actually being there, it was, you know, Baylor fans really showed out for that game. And unfortunately, not the result that Baylor fans wanted. A very weird game, which we're going to get into, but a game that I think showed good things and bad things about kind of where Baylor is at right now. But overall, good holidays and a fun bowl game to kind of get back to bowl season right after missing it in 2023.
Yep, so back to it, and the Bears finishing 8-5 on the year. With the loss to LSU, again, 44-31 Tigers win. They finished 9-4 on the season as a result, and so I guess we will just kind of get into this a little bit. We're not going to go drive by drive like we normally do. This game is days old at this point, so I just don't feel the need to do that the way that we typically would on a Monday fresh off of a game. But just kind of glancing over it quarter by quarter almost, if you will. A game where LSU marched down the field on their opening drive and scores and does so pretty emphatically and pretty authoritatively. A 12-play drive that took 6.5 minutes off the clock. Very impressive stuff there. And Garrett Nussmeier, I think everybody walked away thinking that this is a young guy that we're going to hear a lot about moving forward, if you hadn't already. And he'll be back at LSU next year, and they'll probably be a contender partially as a result of that, but also I think some of those other young guys that we saw play for them throughout this game. But very impressive opening drive. And then Baylor really dug itself a hole, and this is a hole that basically this is the story of the game, was them trying to dig out of a hole the entire time because they gave up the big early opening drive score and then turned right around and 5 plays into their own first drive. You have Sawyer Robertson getting intercepted, trying to go for what, Bryson Washington, and just an unfortunate deal there where Washington can't grab the ball, and it's there for the taking. LSU grabs a hold of it, runs the other way with it, and it's 14-0. And that was halfway through the first quarter. It's 14-0. That's just kind of what set the tone for the rest of this game, was the Bears trying to catch up basically from this point on.
Yeah, it was. And that was just an unfortunate play. I mean, it fell right into Devon Keyes' lap. I mean, he literally just stood there, grabbed it, ran in for a touchdown. That was actually a guy that Baylor recruited out of high school as well. He's going to be a good player for LSU over the years. But he comes up with a big play. It's just unfortunate. And how many times is Baylor on early drives? I think the first drive of the game, I think in three games this year, they've had an interception. So kind of weird outcomes there. This drive, of course, really set them back for the rest of this game. And again, made them play catch up. And there's reasons for it. And we're going to dive more deeply into that. But getting down 14-0 in this game, it didn't feel insurmountable. But it's definitely a hole that, like, you cannot dig yourself going into this game that you talked about, you know, how good practices were and how good the lead up was. And you had all this momentum off the season. You just come out kind of flat to start this game a little bit.
Baylor would score a nice little drive, five plays, 50 yards, Josh Cameron, touchdown. LSU responds and takes away all the momentum you had just grabbed, and they make it 21-7 as Garrett Nussmeier and company march down the field. So they answer with a big 41-yard touchdown to Chris Hilton. That just felt like another gut punch when you had just seemingly gotten yourself back into the game. You give up a score, and you're back down 14 after all that. So everything just remains where it is. Couple drives later, LSU makes it 28-7 after forcing you into a three and out. This time, Tre'Dez Green, one of those young players for LSU that you feel like is going to definitely be part of their hype up and ramp up for next year. Nussmeier, of course, leading the way in that regard. But they connect here on a little one-yard touchdown, and it's 28-7, and it's halfway – not even halfway through the second quarter at this point. So already starting to get a little concerned that this is not just going to be a loss. It's going to be a blowout loss, an ugly loss at this stage. It won't be ultimately, but this early on in the game, it certainly felt like they were just trying to stay above water and really struggling to do so at this point.
Right. Tre'Dez Green was a problem, and a problem that Baylor did not prepare for it all. And it was early on in the game. I think he converted two third downs on their first drive and scored a touchdown on the first drive. And it really was interesting because, you know, relying on a young guy like this isn't something that's typically commonplace, especially when, you know, they had Mason Taylor all year. But Garrett Nussmeier was looking at him constantly in these big situations, and he was coming through for them. And he was a big impact player, especially in the first half of this game.
So down 28-7, you're going for it suddenly the next drive at the LSU 40 on 4th and 10, and you're getting stopped. What happened here? I'm trying to remember here.
This was they went for it on 4th and 10, and Sora Robertson just ran out of time. And he didn't get sacked, but it was like a one-yard. He didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I was trying to remember exactly what play this was. But
there was pressure.
One-yard gain, terrible execution and just showing on 4th down and 10. To get 1 yard. So you turn the ball over. LSU misses the field goal, however, to give you a little crack of light through that door to know that it's not completely shut just yet, despite the fact you're down 21 points with less than 5 minutes to play. But instead of being down 24, it's only 21 because they do get the field goal blocked here. So Kyler Jordan with a big play to keep the Bears feeling like there's at least a little bit of something going your direction. And they would turn that into a touchdown right afterwards, a nice six-play drive they would have the missed field goal, and then what is it, the kick return touchdown? Is that what would end up happening here?
Yeah, so
here?
Baylor would score, and then the kick return touchdown.
Okay, the way it's lined up here has got me all backwards.
Yeah, Dawson Pendergrass ran in for a touchdown, then they immediately kick it off. And
yeah, okay, so it's 28-7, and then you have the Dawson Pendergrass touchdown drive, six-play drive, so it's 28-14, you feel pretty good about that. And yes, then it's the kickoff return touchdown that's given up. And basically, again, you're starting to climb out of that hole that you dug for yourself, and you get kicked back down into it and have to start over from scratch almost, it feels like. But yes, the big 95-yard return from Xavion Thomas right after you had just scored to make it a two-score game, and it's back now to a 20-point lead for the LSU Tigers. Baylor would get the ball back and put a pretty impressive drive together given the little amount of time that they had. Put a 10-play drive in a minute and a half. It's a lot of plays in a little amount of time. It ultimately results in a 23-yard field goal by Isaiah Hankins as they just got down inside the 15, got inside the 10, and just ran out of time basically in the half to be able to get more out of it than they would have liked with just the field goal. So that's the way the half ends. is at 34-17 with the Bears kicking that field goal, but not before they gave up that big kick return touchdown. And that play in particular is what stood with you and left the bad taste in your mouth there at halftime, even with that field goal kind of saving face a little bit. But yeah, you're down 34-17 at the half, and you've given up a pick six and a kick return touchdown. So not feeling great about that part of the execution and the just overall look to this game through the first couple of quarters.
Definitely not. I mean, all the big plays felt like went LSU's way, the moments that mattered most. I know Baylor had a blocked, you know, field goal, and that's great and all, but the ones that mattered most, LSU was rising to the occasion and Baylor wasn't, whether that was converting on fourth down, giving up a special teams touchdown, giving up a defensive touchdown. Those are things that really set you behind. And, you know, you're down by 17 here. And one thing I want to mention, you know, Jack Stone had been so good all year at kicking touchbacks. In this game, he was not kicking the ball well at all. It was very apparent early on. I think Xavion Thomas gave them field position at like the 33-yard line on an earlier kick that could have gone for a whole lot more. And that's why they had to make the change. I mean, Hankins had to come in and start kicking, you know, kind of sky balls. And it was something that ended up being very impactful and something that Baylor hadn't had to deal with all year long.
Yeah, I don't know if he messed something up in practice or just had too much Thanksgiving ham or a Christmas ham or whatever, or I don't know, but yeah, not a good time to suddenly not be kicking it out of the back of the end zone.
No, he was short like 5 yard line the whole time, and that, I mean, that you can't do that. Like you can't be kicking it that short, and it was really costly.
So you're down 34-17. You open up the half, go on a 12-play drive that ends up turning the ball over on downs by the end of it. Fourth and six at the LSU 9. The Bears decide to go for it and what look for Ashton Hawkins in the back of the end zone. Find him, and he appears to score a massive touchdown that would have made this a 34-24 game, but instead it gets called a touchdown, and then they go to video review, and they reverse it. And I guess if you want to bring your microscope out and say that he didn't drag his toe or whatever, but it is so very rare they overturn a touchdown call, especially when it's not clear video review that he did not score. So, you know, I don't know, but that was a huge call by the officials. I don't have any faith in college officiating, so I'm not surprised. I just kind of rolled my eyes when they made this call, because I don't think they make this call in normal circumstances throughout the regular season. This is a touchdown pretty much 9 times out of 10, but whatever. This crew decides upon review that they've somehow got indisputable video evidence to overturn this thing. So Baylor turns it over and LSU gets the ball back. But what a huge play in this game on what should have been a touchdown to Ashton Hawkins.
This call kept this game from being a really fun game. And that's super disappointing. Like, you would have had an opportunity here for this to just turn into just this complete slugfest, a really good football game. This was kind of the drive that would have given Baylor a whole lot of momentum, and it kind of did for a little bit here. I cannot believe they overturned that. I understand that, oh, you want to pull out your little rule book and say, oh, you know, he turned his ankle, so therefore his entire foot needs to touch the ground, and we're going to add all this nuance to it. But you're exactly right. You go to any stadium across college football during the regular season, there is no way that is overturned from a touchdown to an incomplete pass. No way. No, there's no chance. And so this was a terrible call. Again, I don't want to say that this game was determined by this, because it absolutely was not. But it was something that was very notable. It takes points off the board. And really, I mean, that catch by Ashton Hawkins was spectacular. I mean, the guy was so high in the air, and for him to have the body control to get that foot back in, super impressive play. Should have been a touchdown, but again, it wasn't.
It wasn't, but it was a very impressive play. So LSU got the ball back and would actually turn it over 3 plays into this drive. Devin Bobby with the fumble recovery was a huge play to keep a little bit of hope alive, especially when you turn around and score 6 plays later. This time, Ashton Hawkins does get his 6 points from Sawyer Robertson, 4-yard touchdown catch, and it's 34-24 with 6+ minutes left to go in the third quarter. So as weird as this opening frame has been with the turnover on downs, and then, you know, the would have been touchdown there on the turnover on downs with the LSU fumble, and then your score, you're into a 10-point football game, and then LSU turns right around and throws an interception. Garmon Randolph with the big pick of Garrett Nussmeier, And he gets it down to the LSU 26-yard line. So the Bears are feeling it. The crowd's going crazy. As improbable as it is that they are in this game, here they are in this game. And then the play of the game, I think undoubtedly the play of the game, the one that just ended any hopes of this being more than what it could have been, on fourth down and one at the LSU 17, they line up to go for it, and you understand the situation. I did feel like they were chasing points like two, like if like it's like if you kick a couple field goals, then it is a little bit different. But I understand the philosophy and all of that. But it's like all of a sudden you look up and you've gone for it, and you're like 0-for-4 on fourth downs, and you could have had like 9 or 12 points. It's like, well, that could have probably helped, but I get the where you were coming from and the situations and all that. So here in this situation, fourth and one. The LSU 17, you're down 10. It's late in the third quarter. Like, line up and go for it. And unfortunately, the ball is snapped well over Sawyer Robertson's head. It goes tumbling back towards midfield, and eventually it is recovered by Sawyer Robertson, but it's a turnover on downs. It's a just brutal disaster of a play on fourth down and one, and it, for all intents and purposes, end your comeback attempts, because the air is just completely let out of the stadium when this happens. So an awful sequence of events, and LSU, we'll get to what they do with it, but they're going to open this thing up and not really look back after this point.
Right. I do want to give a quick shout-out to Carl Williams for forcing that fumble on Aaron Anderson. Just a quick note sure. there on the punch-out. But, yeah, I think, oh, man, you know, this was something that was happening throughout the game. And it was bound to pop up. I mean, Colton Price, for whatever reason, it hasn't really been this way at all this season. He was snapping high and right the whole first half and into the second half as well. And this one, again, high and right. Just Sawyer couldn't come down with it. And there, I mean, no one was coming down with that snap. But you saw him a couple times in this game where he literally had to jump to catch the snap and then hand it off or catch it and then try to reset his feet and look down the field. It was a problem in this game. I don't know what was going on with Colton, if it was just, you know, maybe he was dealing with something, but I hadn't seen his snaps like that really all year long, and it crept up in a big way. You're exactly right. After this ball goes over Sir Robertson's head for a negative 36-yard loss, I mean, and LSU gets the ball at midfield, I mean, you kind of felt like this game was pretty much doomed at that point.
Yeah, I think if they score there on fourth and one, I mean, I think, first of all, they convert. Maybe not. Maybe LSU stuffs them or something like that. But the way they were moving the ball, I think you feel pretty good about them getting that yard. And the thing about it at this point is, we should mention, Bryson Washington's been out of the game for, like, the entire game practically. Like, he got knocked out so early, I forgot to even mention it, because he was a non-factor in this game, yeah, basically.
Second possession.
Yeah, like he was out so early that he was not even a factor. He had a handful of carries. So he's not in the game. So you're basically down to just Dawson Pendergrass at this point. But they're playing hard. They're in this game, and then this happens, and it's just like all the air is just out of the room, because there's still technically another quarter left to play and all this. But, man, you've been playing so hard and trying to fight to get back in this game. Like, the last thing you could do was just take away points from yourself, and you were, I mean, you're probably going to go for it at this stage of the game, but, like, man, again, you're leaving points on the field. So yeah, instead of what would have been a 34-27 game or a 34-31 game, you fumble it, you sail it over Sawyer Robertson's head, LSU gets the ball back, and this is where you feel like it's pretty much over, as they very quickly cash it in and close out the third quarter with a Caden Durham run that sets up the touchdown run to start the fourth quarter. Josh Williams right there on the first play of the fourth, a 4-yard touchdown run to cash in that fumble, and LSU goes up 41-24. And so it's like, now you got to score 17 points in the final frame, and you know that's pretty much not going to happen at this stage.
Yeah, and that Caden Durham run on 3rd and 9, in which Garmon Randolph failed to set the edge, was just a killer. I mean, there's no way that should be a 19-yard gain for him off of that, but he didn't set the edge. He's able to get around the edge untouched, completely untouched, and that's just really tough to see. You force a field goal there again. It helps you, you know, keep LSU off the scoreboard a little bit, which is something they needed. Unable to do it, and of course, they score just a few plays later.
Yeah, so 41-24, Baylor turned the ball over on downs. LSU would add a field goal, just basically pad their lead, 44-24. And it's still 10 minutes left to go in the game. Baylor goes down and scores a 9-play, 75-yard drive, one of their better just sequences of the entire afternoon. Dawson Pendergrass with a touchdown run makes it 44-31. But then the rest of the game would be taken up by a long LSU drive that would end on downs, and then Baylor gets the ball back after stopping them on 4th and 5, but with just a minute left to go, just running plays out to end the game, basically, and turn it over on downs to end the game.
Well, really important thing to mention here, LSU did have to punt on the drive where the score is 44-31. They punt it, and Josh Cameron houses it for a touchdown, and it's a roughing the kicker or roughing the punter call. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that again, that's another thing where it's just like, man, how many points are you just going to either give away or take off the scoreboard for yourself? And this was another one of those instances. It was clearly a penalty. I wasn't necessarily sure that it was roughing and not running into, which would have been a pretty significant difference, but it still would have taken points off the board for Baylor in that situation. Just wanted to mention it because, again, that's 7 more points that were taken off the board.
Yeah, this is why, like, 7 days afterwards is not the best time to just off-the-cuff review. But, yeah, that was a very important sequence, and that was a big moment in the game that was just kind of symbolic of the entire showing of just doing things to shoot yourself in the foot or take points away from yourself. So whether it be the snap over the head on 4th and 1, or it's the penalty on the kick return, or it's the pick 6, or it's the kick return for touchdown that you gave up, or, like, I mean, not winning football, doing all those things, much less all in the same game, and we could continue to go on. But, yeah, that was a huge sequence as well, and you thought that maybe Josh Cameron had a huge play to actually keep this thing somewhat alive, but Micah Gifford, who Dave Aranda mentioned in the post games, a really good player and plays really hard for them, just got the penalty there, and it was unfortunate, and, you know, didn't lose the game by any means, but it did take a touchdown off the board that maybe would have spiced things up there towards the end. So instead, yeah, LSU gets the ball back and they run some more time off the clock before turning it over on downs, and then Baylor gets the ball back, runs out the clock, running a few plays before just time runs out on 4th and goal at the LSU 5, which, I mean, you could have made it a closer-looking game, but, I mean, we knew what was what there at that point. So, yeah, turn it over on 4th down again, because you did that so many times during the course of this game. And, again, I understand some of those calls. You didn't need field goals. You needed touchdowns. But then when you look at it after the game and you see that they were 1-for-6 on 4th down, like, that's not going to ever win you a football game, most likely. So, yeah, that number, that stat, 1-for-6 4th down attempts, that's pretty damning. But 500-plus yards, 445 through the air, some things to like, but not so much the running game. Bryson Washington knocked out early. You ran for less than 2 yards per carry. You ran for only 62 yards. Granted, you threw for 500, so you didn't need to run for a ton. But, yeah, there was the Texas Bowl. A lot of self-inflicted wounds for the Bears, a game where I think you feel like you definitely could have won it at certain points if you make one less mistake. But at the same time, LSU basically jumped out, took the lead from the very beginning, held on to it, and they were the better team when all was said and done, because there's moments where they can say, well, if they don't turn the ball over a couple times in the second half, then this game's like a blowout, like not even close at all. So, you know, however you want to view it, it's a bowl game that's not a playoff game, so it's kind of in the eye of the beholder. I view this as Baylor sees they could have played better and could have won this game. I felt like they matched up relatively well with LSU early on. It did look like, man, maybe there is a little bit of a talent disparity as the lead got big, but I think they settled in ultimately, and definitely some things where they need to get better in spots. They need to improve in certain areas. But I thought it was a gritty showing, just kind of the adversity they were handled in the first part of this game. Bryson Washington getting hurt, the 14-0 lead right, you know, so fast out of the gates. So disappointing finish, but I thought it was a respectable showing ultimately, and that's the 2024 season. Bears finish 8-5 with a 44-31 loss to LSU, snaps a 6-game winning streak, And now they ride into the offseason, and that's already very active, as we will get to in just a moment. But your thoughts on the Texas Bowl and just kind of putting a bow on this thing?
I felt like this was, like you mentioned, a pretty respectable showing by Baylor. I felt like at times LSU proved that, you know, some of their guys were more talented at times, especially because Baylor couldn't take advantage of the areas where LSU had guys missing. So you look at the offensive line versus Baylor's defensive line. I didn't feel like Baylor dominated to the degree that they really needed to against, you know, what wasn't their complete backup offensive line, but, I mean, they were missing, I think, four starters on their offensive line. So very much a mix and match of guys there that Baylor didn't take advantage of. On the offensive line versus defensive line, Baylor versus LSU, felt like LSU held up against Baylor. And, I mean, you know, 33 carries for 62 yards is deceiving because you have a negative 36-yard run because of the snap over Sir Robertson's head. So they ran the ball for around 3 yards per carry. But to me, the biggest difference in this game, and it was something that popped up all through the second half of the year, there is clearly something up with Sir Robertson's, you know, ankle, leg, whatever it may be. Dave Rand has mentioned he's been in a boot a ton. And if you remember early in the season, he had some games where he showed some major flashes running the football, whether it was against Colorado or BYU. And LSU's Achilles heel on defense all year long has been their inability to stop running quarterbacks. And Baylor simply couldn't take advantage of that at all. And I think it's because Sawyer is not 100% in that regard. I think it's been mentioned so many times that it's hard to not take that away, hard to not think that. And so I do believe if he was fully healthy and running the football, it would have helped Baylor a ton because they became very one-dimensional. LSU had zero fear of Sawyer keeping the ball on a read option. They had zero fear of him running a QB power, which is something he's really good at, and Baylor just has completely gone away from, I think, again, because he's not 100%. So that was a big takeaway for me as far as Baylor's running attack. Of course, losing Bryson Washington doesn't help. On the flip side, Sir Robertson threw for 445 yards. You got to see a little bit of Ketron Jackson, which was nice to see. 71 yards, really his first big impact since the Iowa State game. Josh Cameron continuing to do Josh Cameron things. 8 catches, 111 yards and a touchdown. Monterey had a good close to his Baylor career with 79 yards receiving, and Ashton Hawkins, 55 yards and a touchdown. On the defensive side, the secondary was clearly the biggest problem for Baylor, though. In this game, Garrett Nussmeier pretty much picked them apart. He posted an 88.2 QBR. He was extremely effective. If you watch this game and didn't just look at the box score, you would say that Garrett Nussmeier looked awesome all day long. And he really did. I mean, you take away that fumble by Aaron Anderson, and I mean, LSU probably scores 50 points in this game. And so, those were kind of my key takeaways, and that's why a lot of people have been, you know, kind of talking about Baylor taking secondary guys, you know, going into the transfer portal period, which we'll talk about. Offensively, I think, though, Baylor definitely showed a lot of things here, a lot of things to be very happy and positive about, aside from going 1-for-6 on fourth down, which is a little fluky.
Yeah, it's a little fluky. It was terrible in terms of the outcome of this game, though, because you convert one or two of those, and man, this is maybe it's an all-timer of a bowl win that we're talking about, but you do snap it over Sawyer Robertson's head. You don't get the benefit of the replay review. There was just some weird things in this game that ultimately proved extremely costly, and I think as much as anything, you can point to those types of situations, but hey, you didn't play well enough at times as well, so you've got to take the onus. And then, yeah, there was also some other contributing factors that made this even more difficult of a hill to climb, and one they weren't able to climb. So I know that's disappointing. You could feel it in the post game, just the end of careers, the end of a season, the end of a specific team. And now it's into the off season, so it's kind of bittersweet there on New Year's Eve to end it with a loss, I'm sure. But now it's time to turn the page. And hey, to the 2024 squad, thanks for the ride. It was a lot of fun and an entertaining season. 8-5, very respectable. 6-game win streak made things look a lot better than they looked like they were going to be halfway through the season, when you felt like we were probably on the cusp of some heads rolling and just who knows what was in store. But they go on the run that they did and turned into a very entertaining season, ultimately there at 8-5. So that's the 2024 Bears for you. yeah, I guess anything else to add before we just kind of turn the page and start getting to all the changes that are already occurring here?
Pretty disappointing start, pretty awesome finish for this team, and that's how I think they're going to be remembered. It in a lot of ways, it's very reminiscent of that 2012 team with Nick Florence. They ended up going 8-5. They, of course, won out, but just the complete turnaround from what happened at the beginning of the season for both those teams to then where they were at to end the year, and kind of the feelings going into the offseason, right? Because after the 2012 season, was kind of like, oh, if Bryce Petty turns into a really good player and can make up for losing Nick Florence, then that team's going to be awesome. They were awesome. And now you look at this year's team, you know, it's like if Baylor can fix some things on defense, then maybe they can turn around and have a really good year in 2025. So I think there's a lot of optimism going on as we kind of head into this offseason. I think Baylor fans, I think, you know, the Baylor staff, I think Baylor players, I think there's a lot of excitement because of how the season ended.
Yeah, I mean, despite the loss, I definitely think they hit the offseason on a positive note and definitely an upward trajectory in terms of the program. So we will see how they can turn 8-5 into 9, 10, 11 wins, trying to get in the playoff, trying to win the Big 12 again. Those are all the goals that reset now and the ones you start working towards, although everybody's going to take a little bit of a breather, but not too much of one, as we've seen over the last few days. Let's get into now what's occurred since the bowl game ended, and that is a couple of coaching changes on the defensive side of the football. First of all, the initial change that we heard about was earlier in the day yesterday, and then I think later on in the day, the second one broke right before our show at 3 on 365 Sports. But the initial one, Caleb Collins, a outside linebackers coach for the past few seasons and a guy who joined the staff back in June of 2020. He is now out as outside linebackers coach for the Bears. Caleb Collins with Dave Aranda and staff for the past handful of seasons, a guy he knew from his time at LSU, Houston native, a very likable guy and somebody I enjoyed listening to, but somebody who I think some of the saving grace here, because you're definitely not rooting for people to lose their jobs or anything, but he's a young coach. He's got, I think, a bright future ahead of him, and I would imagine the experience the last few years invaluable in terms of coaching alongside Aranda and, you know, just getting that experience. So point being, I don't feel like he'll, you know, need to search too far and wide to find the job. Ultimately, I think he'll land on his feet. Still unfortunate to see anybody get let go. He let it be known in his goodbye message, basically, that it was Baylor's decision to part ways, which is something that he was kind of dealing with the first time in his career. But again, he'll be fine, and good luck to him moving forward. But Caleb Collins is out, so the Bears are looking for an outside linebackers coach.
Really good guy, and a guy who's been with Dave Aranda since 2020. I mean, he was on the original staff, and then he worked his way up to being promoted to being the outside linebackers coach back in 2021. So, yeah, you know, it's tough to see. I do think that having coaching shakeups on the staff is a good thing. Like, ultimately, when things become stagnant, it's a good idea to kind of move on and see if you can't, you know, find some magic with someone else. And, you know, Baylor did that last offseason when they brought in guys like Mason Miller, Keenan Hall, Jake Spavital. They changed some things up, and it really helped them. And I think they're kind of looking to do the same thing on the defensive side. And, you know, with Caleb Collins, I think it's interesting because this year, you know, you had Steve Linton, you had Garmon Randolph, two old guys, guys who have been around college football for a long time. But going forward into this year, you know, they're going to be working with a lot of guys who are kind of, you know, raw talents, right? You look at Kamarion Morgan, a top 200 guy who needs to be developed early on in his career. Guys they brought in like Emarion Winston from Oregon and Matthew Fobbs White from Tulane. These are guys who have some production, but are kind of right at the, they're kind of right in the middle there, right? Where there's still this big ceiling that they can get to, and they need to hit it. And we've seen some of that from them, especially Fobbs White at Tulane, but they need to be developed and turned into really, really good football players. And I think this is a good point where, you know, this group is rebooting. And so it kind of makes sense to bring in, you know, a fresh perspective to the room as they're kind of, you know, completely rebooting outside of Kyler Jordan and Corey Kelly.
And then it wasn't done there. After announcing or letting it be known through his own post that he was out of there, Caleb Collins, we thought, okay, that's interesting. Not, I guess, totally surprising. You can understand sort of where Aranda's coming from in terms of shaking things up. But then word comes down a little while later that there's a second departure from the coaching staff, as Kevin Curtis is no longer the cornerbacks coach with the Bears since 2021. Took over for Brian Stewart. If you'll remember, he was on Aranda's original staff, and then he was gone a year in to Maryland? Was that right afterwards for Brian Stewart? Yeah. So that was a guy we hardly knew, really. Now, looking back on it, I almost forgot that he was here until this news, and I'm like, oh, yeah, he wasn't here originally. It was Brian Stewart, but he took over for Brian Stewart, had been the corners coach the last four seasons, I guess 21, 22, 23, yeah, four seasons. And it won't be a five, as Kevin Curtis, the Texas Tech alum, is no longer with the program, as announced as well. So another departure, and this one not totally surprising, just from if you want to keep things fresh and shake things up. But I think also, you know, Aranda there in that post-game press conference asked about, like, what needs to change and whatever, and like the main thing he said was like, we got to get better in the secondary. Yeah. Was one of the messages from Saturday's from last week's post game interview. And it wasn't an indictment on Kevin Curtis or anything. It was just like, hey, where do you get better? And after that game, like, I mean, where else are you pointing to other than we need to get a pass rush? Like, mm-hmm. That's for damn sure. But yeah, you definitely could get better in the secondary. I think that was evident throughout the season. And so not a complete shock to see them moving on and shaking things up there. So best of luck as well to Kevin Curtis, who I think will be just fine finding a job somewhere else. But you can understand kind of the angle from Dave Aranda here and heading into the offseason.
You mentioned, you know, the two things they didn't do in the bowl game. They didn't get after the quarterback, and they couldn't stop the pass at all. Now, not having Steve Linton definitely didn't help. Not having Devin Lemire didn't help either. I mean, at least you have another option back there. But in general, those two things have plagued Baylor for years now. You know, you're having to rely on linebackers to create your pressures. And I know Baylor, and specifically Dave Aranda, enjoys blitzing his linebackers, but I think he would also like to see his guys win more up front, especially the guys on the edges who they're expecting that from. Kevin Curtis, another great guy. I think it's important to remember that, you know, all of these guys are really good people. Like, the guys who have been at Baylor, the coaching staff, great people. And Kevin Curtis is another one of those guys. I think just in general, this group was good in 2023, but they were good on a really bad team. And so it's kind of like, how much do you take away from that? And then you look at this season, and you see a guy like Caden Jenkins kind of take a step back from what was a really good freshman season. Some of these other guys who were expected to be developed, like LeVar Thornton and Reggie Bush, weren't on the field a ton. Tevin Williams was injured for, you know, a lot of this season, so you didn't get to see a ton of him, but he played well in the bowl game. And then, of course, you saw Lorando Johnson play well. But I think that this group definitely needs to take a step forward from a recruiting standpoint in a big way, and I think from just developing. I mean, this group needs to get better. Now, I will also say this. Secondary is not only on cornerbacks. Like, the safeties have to be better as well. So I just want to point that out too. But I do think that when you look at the grand scheme of things and how this season played out, too many times Baylor was losing one-on-one matchups on the outside, and especially when it wasn't going towards Lorando Johnson. And I think that needs to change going forward, and I think it will. I think it's good for both sides, and again, an opportunity for Dave Aranda to go find a guy to bring in. I think when you look at the edge spot and the cornerback spot, my hunch is one of these guys is going to be a really good recruiter. I think that's going to be very important for one of them, and then the other one might be more of just a guy that maybe Aranda's been around for a long time, a guy who he really trusts to not only coach that position, but also maybe potentially tries to find someone who could eventually be the defense coordinator here whenever, if Dave Aranda decides he doesn't want to do that full time, if, you know, if he has that choice or that option. Because as we've heard from him, it's been a lot, you know, for him to be defense coordinator and head coach. So maybe he tries to find that, you know, kind of next guy in future years. I'm not talking about next year, because I do firmly believe he's probably going to be defense coordinator at least for one more year.
Yep, so you now have a couple of job openings to follow along with, as the Bears will be looking for a cornerbacks coach and also an outside linebackers coach. So best of luck to Kevin Curtis and Caleb Collins. Good luck to those two. and I'm sure they'll land on their feet. But always an unfortunate part of the end of seasons is the turnover, especially when, you know, you're letting people go and all of that. So not a fun part of the process, but a necessary part of it, and excited to see how they try and upgrade and get better in a couple of areas where you're not totally shocked that they decided to make a move. But there you go with that. That's part of the coaching side of things that will change. And as we saw, this lasted coaching changes all the way into the spring when they, you know, sitting there hiring an offensive line coach to replace an offensive line coach and never even coached a game for them. Hopefully they're not like that deep into it this year, and you kind of can knock these two out and sort of be done with it. Because last year that was a real concern of just how long it drew on the changes, and eventually Mason Miller being your O-line coach after, you know, Alabama swoops in and pulls the rug out from underneath you and all of that. Definitely hope for smoother waters this time around and a cleaner spring for the guys just being coached up by their position coaches. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. I would think Aranda's already got some names in mind and is doing his due diligence, and we'll have that all organized and ready to go in short order, because you don't make those moves without having the plan already in place. So curious to see what that plan looks like. Meanwhile, personnel-wise, we've, you know, not had a show in a couple weeks. We're not going to be able to run down everything, but you have had quite a few guys enter the transfer portal at this point in time. I'm just going to name some of them: Corey Gordon, Isaiah Dunson, Tayshawn Wilson, Jacquez Evans, Jonah Burton, Garrison Grimes in the transfer portal, Carmelo Jones, Alvin Abasile, Kyan Roberts-Day, Trey Wilson, and Daquan Finn. Those all players who have entered the transfer portal, and in the case of four of them, have already found their landing spots. Alvin Abasile is going to Houston, so the Bears will line up against him in the future. Kyan Roberts-Day joining Jeff Traylor at UTSA. Trey Wilson linking up with SMU and getting a little bit closer to home. And then Daquan Finn lands at Miami of Ohio, which is probably about where he needs to be, is sort of at that level, but he has found his landing spot with that bonus medical year that he was able to get. So that's where those four have landed. The rest of them still out there searching. Anything from that group of names there that stands out to you in terms of the departures before we get into all of the additions they've made so far?
I mean, a few of those guys I think could do pretty well at their next spot. You know, Kyan Roberts-Day going to UTSA is very intriguing. Curious kind of how that all plays out. Daquan Finn, you know, good for him. He goes back to the MAC. He's going to be able to play Toledo, and, you know, I think he'll be pretty good for them there. We saw what he did at Toledo, so I can't imagine he won't have success. Trey Wilson's a good player. He just needed a different system, and I think SMU will help him get there. And, you know, Alvin Abasile, you know, that's another tough one to see go. I know Baylor had a lot of hopes for him for a while, but it just never fully panned out. So now he'll get another kind of refresh at Houston, which is good for him. I still think he's a pretty talented player.
And I saw where Corey Gordon, did he commit to Louisville?
Louisville, yeah, okay. That was recent. Yeah, in recent days he committed to Louisville. You know, he decided to make that move. He was going to probably be in the two deep, as we saw this year, but I don't know if he was going to be a starter necessarily for Baylor, because we haven't really seen him take that role during the time that he's been here.
Yeah, so I think that one was relatively recent. Hadn't seen it on my list, yeah. But had caught that, was it yesterday or maybe something, and yeah, just remembered as we were talking about it. So he's another one. So five of those guys have landed at new spots, and Corey Gordon, good luck to him at Louisville. So there you go with the departures, and some you feel them, some, you know, it's just time to move on, but there's been plenty of additions for the Bears as well. And, man, I don't even know where to begin here. I mean, you had Walker White right before or right after Christmas break, right before New Year, or right after Christmas break, right before New Year's hit, and that was a nice little late Christmas present, early New Year's, however you want to look at that. But the quarterback, former four-star from Auburn, now part of the Baylor recruiting class, Kobe Prentice, Cole Wilson. I mean, how do you kind of – I don't know. We've been gone for like 3 weeks, so yeah. I don't know if we want to like just go name by name by name, or how do you kind of want to do this here?
Yeah, we can go. Why don't we? How about next week we dive into every single one, okay, since we'll have more time next week? I'll just kind of briefly talk about a few of these guys, just very briefly. I mean, you know, landing a guy like Walker White is something that is massive for this program. I mean, he entered the transfer portal December 17th, and then, you know, basically it was going to be Baylor for a long time in there, and it took him some time before everything was official, but it was very clear that, he really wanted to be at Baylor, and Baylor really wanted him. And I think he fits really nicely with kind of what they're trying to build in that quarterback room. This is a young room now. I mean, you look at, you got Storer Robertson, but then outside of that, you got, you know, Walker White, who's got 4 years of eligibility. Nate Bennett's got 4 years of eligibility. Edward Griffin has 5 years of eligibility. And then, you know, you're kind of just looking at a good room, I think. It's a young room, and now you got competition in the room, which personally, I think that's the biggest thing for Baylor this offseason, is you got to find competition, because you got to be able to push guys. You need to have backup plans. You need to have guys who are, you know, making the roster more talented as a whole. And I think Walker White's going to bring that to the table. This is the highest QB prospect that Baylor's ever landed outside Jared Stidham. So he's number two on the entire list ever at Baylor. And I know we can go back before recruiting rankings, and I'm sure someone will bring up, you know, other guys there, but he was rated higher than RG3, you know, rated higher than all of those guys. This is a big time prospect, a guy who is the number five overall quarterback in his recruiting class. Definitely an NFL talent. The thing I get asked the most about him, though, is why didn't he play at Auburn? I think the important thing to remember about him, and it's pretty apparent when you watch his film, he was still a pretty raw prospect and a guy who needed to be developed. I personally don't think he was ready for that as a true freshman. I'm not even sure if he'll be ready for that as a redshirt freshman to be, you know, the starting quarterback at a school. But coming to Baylor, he doesn't have to be that. You know, he could win the backup job. But as far as starting goes, he still has another year to develop and get himself to the point where I think he can be a really, really exciting quarterback for this Baylor team. He's fast. He's big. He's strong. Got a huge arm. And his accuracy improved greatly from his first 2 years as a starting quarterback in high school to his senior year, which is very encouraging. So, yeah, big-time prospect, a guy who's very unique. Aside from that, just kind of broad topic points here, they, of course, have two wide receiver commits, which was very important. It still looks like they're trying to land one more. A name that's kind of been mentioned a ton with them is potentially Texas A&M transfer Noah Thomas. Things there seem to be trending towards Georgia, but he has been a guy who's been kind of, you know, popping up on the list, and it's clear Baylor would like to add another wide receiver to that core, which makes a ton of sense because they're very young there. They don't have a lot of depth there. They need to add some guys to take some pressure off of, you know, Josh Cameron, take some pressure off of, you know, the transfers that they brought in, and, of course, build a room that sets up nicely for Sora Robertson. Brought in Joe Crocker, a multi-year offensive lineman, a guy that's got experience with Mason Miller, Samu Taumanu-Pepe, who we've talked about, the A&M transfer, fills in very nicely at nose tackle, over 350 pounds, could be the next guy who provides similar impact to Apu. We'll see on that. There's a lot of questions about it, but I still think there's potential that he gets there and at least fills that hole for a couple years for Baylor. Added two edge guys, Emarion Winston from Oregon, Matthew Fobbs-White from Tulane. Two good pass rushers. They get more athletic there at the edge position. Two linebackers, Phoenix Jackson from Fresno State, Florida International linebacker Travion Barnes, who was actually an All-Conference USA guy this past season. I think he was the All-Conference USA Player of the Year for the defensive side. So two really good linebackers. I think Travion will slide in next to Keaton Thomas and be the starting linebackers for Baylor next year. Then you got two safeties in Tyler Turner from Oregon and Devin Turner from Northwestern. I have big hopes for both of them. I think Devin Turner is a spectacular pickup. I think he's going to change a lot of things about Baylor's secondary. I really like him as a prospect, a guy that's been in a good defense, just hasn't been on a good team. I think that'll really help him when he gets to Baylor. So that's kind of the rundown of what they've done. Next week, we can dive in a little bit deeper on specifics about these guys, but it's a really nice group. I like what Baylor has done. They've addressed a lot of key positions, and now, you know, it's kind of just about rounding that out before the spring hits. Which, again, the spring semester starts, I think, January 21st, but the report date, I believe, is January 17th for the 14 early enrollees and then the guys that they signed through the transfer portal.
So there you go. There's a little bit of a transfer portal wraparound, and it'll be a continuing process to see who else they add between now and the end of the windows. But, yeah, this will be ongoing, and that list will grow longer on both the departures and the incoming guys. But kind of the big bulk we've seen already, and so far a pretty nice start. Definitely not wasting any time. Aranda and company not suffering from the same mistakes of 2021 and kind of coming off of that and deciding, hey, we're just going to develop and not really add a bunch of guys. I mean, that became pretty clear pretty quickly. That was a mistake. They had to scramble and try to rebound from that, but it's taken some time to do so. Now they're in a better position, and they are not going to make that same mistake as you've seen. So very interesting start to this offseason so far, just the jumping out into the portal the way they have, but also a couple of changes on the defensive side of the ball coaching-wise. So that's the beginning of this 2025 campaign now, I guess you could say. These are the seeds being planted for next football season. So there you go with that. And there's pretty much all the news on football at the moment, although I'm sure we'll get more into it with the mailbag. Do want to make mention about basketball, although that's not the most fun topic in the world right now, especially on the men's side of things. But the Bears, 9-4 now, but coming off of a really embarrassing loss to Iowa State, 19-point loss to the Cyclones out in Ames, which used to be Scott Drew East in a lot of ways. His own personal Hilton Coliseum is what it felt like definitely at times over the years, but not this Saturday in particular, as the Bears open 2025 with the blowout loss in Ames. So, yeah, not the way you wanted to start the new year, and here you are now a couple games into the Big 12. You beat up on Utah and made them like it. They're pretty clearly one of the worst teams out there. Iowa State, that was a real eye-opener there. They're a very good team, number three team in the country, but even still, nearly 20-point loss is not something that you see a lot these days.
I think it's pretty clear where Baylor kind of is in the pecking order in the Big 12, and it's really interesting. I think you got Houston and Iowa State, who I think are pretty clearly right now the best teams in the Big 12, and if you go play on the road at either of those spots, there's a high chance you're going to get blown out. I think both of them are top, probably six type teams, maybe top five type teams, somewhere in that range. After that, I mean, it's kind of a who knows type situation. I mean, Kansas has a home loss already, which we hardly ever see this early in Big 12 play. Baylor's 1-1. Yeah, they beat Utah, who might be the worst team in the Big 12, and then they lost to the best team in the Big 12, potentially, in Iowa State. And so now it's just about, how do they look against the rest of the league, right? That middle portion and the bottom portion is what's kind of going to make or break, I think, this team's season. They have a really nice stretch coming up in which they play good teams, competitive teams, but also teams that Baylor has as much talent as and Baylor is as good or better than. I mean, this stretch coming up, you got Cincy tonight, Arizona State, TCU, K-State, at Utah, at BYU. That's a really good stretch for them to win quite a few games. I think they're going to need to win quite a few games if they want to compete for being, in the top, four or so in the Big 12. They're really going to have to take advantage of this schedule. I do not think this is a top two or top three team in the Big 12, though. I think they're pretty squarely somewhere between 4-8, I think, in the Big 12.
Yep, so tonight it'll be Cincinnati at home, and then they'll go on a little bit of an Arizona road trip starting on Saturday. They will be in, Tempe on Saturday, and then Tucson on Tuesday. So a little double dip against the Arizona schools, part of this first year with the Pac-12 schools in the Big 12 and just the new road trips that you have. So a good opportunity to go see some of the sights of Arizona, catch a couple of Baylor basketball games over the next week. But, yeah, up first, it'll be Cincinnati at home tonight, Tuesday night, for those listening after the fact. We'll see how they do there. Meanwhile, the women's side of things, they're 12-3. But coming off of the win over Colorado that followed up the really bad loss to Oklahoma State, the 20-plus point blowout loss at home on January 1st against the Cal girls. That blemish notwithstanding, the Bears had won 7 in a row up to that game and then did respond with a win against Colorado by 14 points. So they are up to now 12-3, and they are a 2-1 team to start Big 12 play here early on. They'll get Arizona on Wednesday on the road and then Arizona State on Saturday. So going on their little Arizona trip, but starting a little bit earlier than the men. So we'll see how they do, Wildcats and then Sun Devils over these next few days.
Yeah, and those are two middle of the pack teams. Arizona's 11-5, Arizona State's 8-7. So good opportunity here for Baylor to gain some momentum here, and they really need to. You know, they've had a good year so far, but you know, losing to Oklahoma State like that is just it's kind of one of those things that makes you kind of look at it and go, "Oh, is this going to be a situation where they're just up and down the whole year?" Maybe. We'll see kind of how that pans out. I think in general they're pretty lucky because the Big 12, while it's maybe a little better than it was a year ago, there are still some really bad teams in this conference and some wins that should be pretty easy, mixed with, of course, the top of the Big 12, which is actually pretty good this season.
So there you go. There's a little bit of hoops as we get into the early days of conference play, but long way to go, and yet kind of the writing on the wall of this Baylor men's team. Not going to live up to your natty expectations. I think that's very fair and very clear at this point. But be interesting to see what they kind of cobble together. And then the women's team, you know, sitting in a nice spot. That blowout loss a few days ago, notwithstanding. So I definitely expect them to be competitive in the Big 12. But that'll do that for an update for right now. And that's where we are. So let's get into the mailbag and answer a few questions before heading on out the door this week. And we'll start off with Dr. Pierce, MPH, who says, "I miss winning and competing in big basketball games. What do you think the number one misstep was that Drew created What do you think was the number one misstep Drew had creating and managing this roster? Something just isn't right." Thank you, Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, we've known this from the beginning of the year, really. You know, those first couple games where you're seeing them against really good teams, you can kind of clearly see their flaws. And, you know, I think it's too simple to say one thing, but the ones that really come to mind for me are the center position, them being too small on the wings, you know, having true kind of, you know, multiple guys who are like Jalen Bridges is kind of more so what they need. They have a bunch of, you know, kind of smaller, shorter guards, you know, fine on offense at times, not great for defenses, especially if you're trying to switch everything. Then they also didn't really make up for the potential of Langston Love not really being fully healthy, which he's missed a bunch of games again. And so it's just kind of one of those situations where, you know, you look at it and go, okay, so you love that they got Norchad Omier. You know, Jeremy Roach is very similar to the guys that they have on the roster. And so what if they would have kind of split up those things? What if they would have taken Norchad Omier, but then, you know, instead of taking Roach, if they would have taken two guys to try to make up for, you know, not taking a super high-end guy like Roach? You know, balancing out the roster more is something that I maybe would have considered. I don't know if I have a number one misstep, but I think in general, the fact that they don't have versatile wings and the fact that they just have a bunch of small guards is really tough. It's really tough to watch. It makes them really bad at times on defense. It limits their rebounding ability. And then in general, you're just kind of replacing guys, you know, with bench guys who are very similar, right? When you look at Rob Wright and Jeremy Roach, I know it's not a direct comparison. Rob Wright's a better point guard. Jeremy Roach is a better shooting guard, but they have similar body types, right? You're still not getting a lot of size nor high-end athleticism there. I just think it's really affected them, and you see it. I mean, defensively, they're not even a top 50 group right now.
Dr. Pierce, hopefully that answers your question, and thank you for also reminding me that there was one other note we didn't get to. You mentioned the schedule, and I think you said the word schedule. Well, maybe you didn't. I don't know what popped in my head that made me look at that. Maybe it was somebody else in the mailbag. I'll give you credit anyways, Dr. Pierce. That's fine. But whatever, reading your question did remind me that Baylor has finalized their non-conference schedule. A few days ago, it was announced they will play Samford to fill out their third and final non-conference spot. They play Auburn. That's been set for years now at McLean Stadium on August the 30th. They go to SMU. That's been set for a while now on September the 6th. So those first 2 weeks of the season will be pretty big games. Definitely the two biggest games to start the season that we've seen in quite a while around here. But they did need a third opponent, and that was finalized last week, and it will be Samford. And it was very clear to know who knows what they're talking about and who doesn't pretty quickly, because I saw like a couple like Samford, and I know it's probably just like 13-year-old on Twitter or 37-year-old that acts like a 13-year-old on Twitter, but it's like just take a glance at the schedule. Yeah. Samford, they need a Samford on the schedule, and you're playing SMU and Auburn already. So yeah, anyways, just wanted to mention that will finalize the schedule for next year. But was good to at least get that done and locked in, because that was a blank that was sitting there with obviously eyes turning towards next season already.
So. And it was always going to be an FCS type opponent. Yeah. I mean, they had to balance out the roster. I mean, it's not like they are scheduling a gimme. I mean, SMU's going to be a top 25 ranked team, maybe even a top 15 ranked team. And Auburn, they've done a lot in the portal. They're probably going to be far improved from what we saw this year. So it's definitely a challenge that Baylor's going to face next season.
Yeah, I think you needed to get somebody. So Samford seems like a respectable team, and that ought to be one heck of a 2025 schedule for sure. Bears always win. Now that we've officially survived the winter portal, do you see any major contributors in the spring portal? Thanks, guys.
I don't see major contributors entering, but guys who maybe don't win starting roles or guys who don't feel like they're going to have a big role on the team, I could see them potentially entering. But I think if you've made it this far and then you're going to go into the spring, if you're still the starter or have a big role going into the season, you're probably going to stick around to play in that role.
Useless Kim Degree, where's Asamoah currently from a role and development perspective? Where do you see him by conference tournament time? Obviously talking about, was it Jason Asamoah?
Yeah.
From the basketball side of things here, just for those not up on game.
Right, the freshman. He's kind of what they need, but I just think he's a year away from being the specific player that I think could make a big difference on this team. You see the athletic flashes, but he's still a little bit raw, and it's unfortunate, but I think his developmental curve is going to be very good. I think he's going to be a very good player in the years to come. I just don't know if his impact is going to be drastic this season. I think they're kind of going to have to roll with the guys that they got. The most important thing for me as far as what do you see from this team going forward, the only thing that can help increase their ceiling is if Langston Love gets healthy and plays like he did for that stretch last year. If he does that, then there's a chance that this team gets a lot better because it means that their offense will probably be back to being like top five instead of top 15, which could offset the fact that their defense is probably still going to be a barely top 50 type defense.
Billy 21, any scheduled visitors football-wise? Scheduled visitors, I think, is what I was asking this week.
Nothing to report, of course. I will always keep you updated on the premium side of things when I hear it, and so when I do, I'll post there first.
Wyatt Smith, who would be your home run hire for outside linebackers and cornerbacks, coach?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I've been thinking about this. My home run hire for cornerback coach would be Maurice Linguis, which he's the cornerback coach and co-defense coordinator at Alabama. He, of course, played at Baylor, was at Baylor as a graduate assistant in 2007 as well. To get him, that would be, I mean, just talking home run, that would be phenomenal. I know Corey Raymond's name's been brought up a ton. He's been at LSU for a long time, has ties to Aranda. That could be a good one. As far as outside linebacker, Akron defense coordinator Tim Tibisar is an interesting one. He coached with Aranda 1 year at Wisconsin. He coached some really good guys. Joe Schobert and TJ Watt are two that come to mind. I think they really need a guy that can develop talent. Up front, a guy who's got a proven, just this proven track record of getting guys who get after the quarterback and developing guys into natural pass rushers. He's a guy that kind of fits that mold. I guess Mo Linguis and Tim Tibisar would be two of the names that I would keep in mind that I would personally like.
And a final question for this week's mailbag from Wyatt as well. Any rumblings about players entering the portal after the news of the two coaches being let go? As always, thank you. I did see Kamari and Morgan had a reaction to, like, Kevin Curtis, I think it was, or maybe it was Caleb Collins.
Caleb Collins, that would have been his position.
Yeah,
coach.
So it was Caleb Collins. But that was just, like, obviously, you feel for your guy, but not like he's entering the portal. But do you feel like anybody's at risk of doing so?
Important to keep in mind with Kamari and Morgan, his lead recruiter was Keenan Hall. For sure. That's his main connection. But obviously on the visits, you're talking to Caleb Collins a lot because he's going to be your position coach. So obviously very much like Caleb Collins. I would also say I think anyone that has met Caleb Collins would say they like Caleb Collins. He's a really good guy. But I think they're going to be fine. I would also mention here the window is closed for Baylor guys, I believe, to enter the portal. There might be a couple extra days in here, but I really don't think you're going to see a lot of movement because of this. And also, I think most of these guys were probably notified that this was going to happen before the outside public.
So there you go. Yeah, I don't think there's anything to worry about there, but definitely guys going to be feeling for their coach, their friend, their partner, and in these last few years of playing at Baylor. In some ways, your mentor, you know, whatever the case may be, that's the hard part about this is, you know, when it comes to the offseason, there's a lot of fun and additions and all of that, but there's also a lot of subtractions and guys losing jobs and things of that nature. So it can be tough, but yeah, I think you just see more of an outpouring of support rather than, oh no, I'm pissed, I'm going to go jump into the portal. So that's good. Just a healthy moving on from both sides. But there you go. There are the questions this week, and it's a little bit different because there's no games to talk about and there's no game to even look forward to. I mean, even before we took our break, had the tail end of the regular season and then still had the LSU game to talk about, and now it is full-blown offseason. We'll obviously talk about basketball, but – you know, football news as it warrants. And as we know now, there will be a couple of coaching changes. And, of course, there's the constant never-ending recruiting cycle. Even if there are dates that are supposed to end it, it's still pretty much never-ending. But, yeah, Grayson, anything before we head on out here?
No, just be sure to check out Sikkim 365 Premium site. We got tons of recruiting content, some football content, of course, basketball content as well, as that's kind of in full swing. But yeah, a lot to be excited about there on the premium side of things. So if you aren't a premium subscriber, be sure to check it out. Got all kinds of insider info on recruiting, as well as, of course, now this coaching search, which Cole Barber has been on top of since the moment it happened. And, of course, be sure to check out 365 Sports, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6.
Yep, that'll about do it for us. Appreciate everybody who watches live Tuesdays at 11 a.m. on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page, and that is the full name. There is the regular official Baylor Athletics, but Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 is where you can find us. You hit like, subscribe, we'd appreciate that. But also 3 to 6, Monday through Friday on 365 Sports, Plain Jane. And you can find me there along with Smokey and Paul for 3 hours each day talking college football and everything else in between. But until then, we'll be back next week with more and whatever else is in the news cycle, from portal to coaching staff to just plain recruiting and whatever else is out there, and hoops as well. Now more of that in store. But for Grayson Grunhafer and Garrett Ross, that'll do it to start off this new year. I'm Craig Smoke, and this has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.